Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to After Dark. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Anthony.
And today we are sinking our teeth, see what I did
there? I do.
Into the history behind the myth of Dracula. And just a warning up top, this is going to get pretty graphic.
Are we ready?
Settle in.
Let's go. The stories that follow are some 600 years old. They are translated from one of the oldest surviving versions of the story of Vlad, Prince of Wallachia, perhaps better known as Vlad the Impaler, or Prince Dracul. But be warned, what follows is not for the faint-hearted, so if you'd rather not enter the world of the Impaler Vlad, then now might be the time to turn back. Okay, now that the others have gone, this history can begin. It comes to us from Nuremberg and dates from 1488. In the year of our Lord, 1456, Prince Dracul, Dracula, did many dreadful and curious things. He had some of his people buried naked up to the navel and had them shot at. He also had some roasted and flayed. He had a large pot made and boards with holes fastened over it, and had people's heads shoved through, head first and upside down, and imprisoned them thus. Then he had the pot filled with water and a big fire made under the pot. Thus the people cried out pitiably until they were boiled quite to death. He had all kinds of peoples impaled sideways. Christians, Jews, heathens, so that they moved and twitched and whimpered in confusion like frogs. Afterwards, he had their hands and feet also impaled. He observed in his language, "Oh, with what great skill they move." He had his amusement in this way. Another time, some Italian ambassadors were sent to him. They bowed and removed their hats in his presence, but they kept on the berries beneath them. He asked them why they did not take their berries off. They said it was their custom and that they did not even remove them for the emperor. Dracula said, "I wish to reinforce this for you." He immediately had their berries nailed firmly on their heads so that they would never fall off again and their custom would remain. Prince Dracul had children roasted. These their mothers had to eat. He cut the women's breasts off. These their husbands had to eat. Afterward, he had them all impaled. Now, soon after this, the king of Hungary captured him and kept him for a long time in severe captivity. Afterwards, he let himself be baptized publicly as a Roman Catholic and did great penance. Yeah, no.
Where
this is
to begin?
This is the comedy episode, Maddie. This is the definitely no deaths in this one.
This is like, okay, so we've got Prince Dracul, Vlad the Impaler, living up to his name.
Yeah.
I knew that he had a bloody history, but that was quite intense.
Yeah, no, it's. And also, it's written in this real 15th century way that's like, and then this happened. And actually, here's just a list of a billion things he's done.
An everyday, matter-of-fact list of all these incredibly
but then,
brutal thing.
At the end, but he converted to Catholicism
fine.
And
so
now he did loads of good
fine.
Things.
Fine,
so actually,
fine.
Don't need to worry about it. Now, if I were to say, like, if I said to you, Dracula or a vampire, let's say, what are the images it conjures up? What are your experiences with Dracula?
Well, it's interesting because I always struggle with Vlad the Impaler being the sort of foundation
for
Dracula, because impaling people, it's not the same.
Ain't the same thing.
I mean, it's very bloody. Mm-hmm. There's literally, you know, there's a lot of real body shock horror. If that was a film, it would be, you know, pretty grim. But this is not the fanged man with the cape holding it up over his eyes. Yeah. This is not the guy who can turn into a bat and sneak through your bedroom window to seduce you and drain you of your blood. I'm assuming these tropes come much later on. So why is there that link between the vampire that we know today as Dracula, as a cultural idea, a cultural trope, and Vlad the Impaler?
It's a good question. I think it comes to us from Stoker, and we'll come to Stoker. But you're absolutely right. This is so much more than Vlad the Impaler. And actually, some of the Vlad the Impaler links are pretty tenuous. So there is a school of thought, and it's often medical school of thought, that goes that we have a medical history for this, and that being porphyria. And so you may have heard of porphyria in terms of George III and the madness of King George, but it was essentially a blood disease, and it incurred different symptoms such as sensitivity to light. So that was one of the things that was associated with it.
Are you telling me that George III was a vampire?
Well, you can draw your own conclusions from this one. But also fangs, in addition to facial disfigurement that might have come out, would be dental disfigurement as well. Blood drinking. Now, it's not so much blood drinking, but the urine would be dark in colour, often quite a purpley red colour. And so that was seen as blood-like. And then some people would drink the urine. The porphyria sufferers would drink the urine, so therefore it would be linked to drinking blood. And this is all pre-Vlad, by the way. And there was an aversion to garlic as well, if you had porphyria. And then, then other things like the fear of the crucifix and things. But that was because the interpretation was that they were afraid of dying. So it's not a literal fear of the crucifix.
Okay.
But come to Vlad. So Vlad is born in 1431, and he's the son of the nobleman Vlad Dracul, who you would have found in modern day Romania. He is called the son of the dragon. Now, unfortunately, in their native tongue, dragon also could mean devil. So this is where you're getting some of these darker things coming in. So it's, you know, it's building up a bit of a myth.
Immediately, they're a family with a not great reputation.
Yeah, although he is in Transylvania, or, you know, areas that are modern day Transylvania. And it is a time and an area that's full of violence. The Ottoman Empire is constantly incurring on the edges of this land. As a matter of fact, Vlad, when he was 11, I think it was, he was taken hostage, and he was kept hostage by agents of the Ottoman Empire. And he was used as a bartering tool for Vlad II to side with the Ottoman Empire. And so, he's experienced some stuff that by no means is an explanation for what we're about to experience. But one of the things that I think is most disturbing, so we get to June 1462, right? And a Turkish army is approaching, where Vlad and his family are held up.
Now, is he an adult now?
He is indeed.
He's not a hostage child.
No. He's out of his hostageness. He had, I'm going to get my figures right here, 23,844 captives impaled in a semicircle as the Turkish army were approaching his lands, and that was to stop them going any further. Now, it was...
It would put me off.
I know, it'd make you go, let's not go that way. Intense summer heat too, by the way. So they're rotting, they're stinking, the flies are around.
I'm not buying this figure. That's a very specific
I know,
amount
right?
of people.
Yeah.
How do we know this in, what are we in, the 15th century?
Yeah, no, the amount of people, come on. I mean, why does it end in a 4? I mean, I love it as a detail, but 23,844. It doesn't make any sense. 23,844, wherever that number has been picked from, I think it's very much part of Vlad's mythology as this is getting, put together later on.
As a historical figure, because there's obviously so much myth here, there's so much augmentation, expansion of the story, there's so much fictionalization put onto it. As a historical figure, what do we think was going on with him? The violence that he metes out in order to maintain his power. Mm-hmm. The fact that it has this legend born of it that morphs in different ways in European culture, but is always monstrous. He is a monster.
Yeah.
As a real human being, a real historical person, what's his deal? Is he a psychopath? Is he monstrous? Was he doing, you know, was he impaling 10 people? And it's been, I mean, that's not great, but is it just being exaggerated?
I mean, it has been exaggerated. Control? It's definitely been exaggerated. However, this reputation grew up in his own time too. So this isn't just something that's coming about, you know, in the Victorian era or whatever. This is something that's happening in his own lifetime. And for that to be happening in what is a relatively violent period of time and geographical location because of the conflict that's happening between the Ottoman Empire and these lands in Eastern Europe.
There's some truth in it.
There must have been something in it where somebody went, now he's a baddin. That's a bit extra what he's doing there. And to prove it, there is an account of him burning a whole Transylvanian suburb in a winter raid. And so he has them impaled and he sits amongst this scene of carnage and he's mopping up the blood of the dead with bread.
Okay, so we...
There's the blood.
Okay, a point to make here, maybe. So in the story that you read at the beginning, he's converted to Christianity.
He is.
And this idea of consuming blood, mm-hmm. and you just said there he's mopping it with the bread, that feels like a Christian ritual. That's like...
The body and blood of Christ.
Christ. So that idea of mopping up the blood and consuming it, it's monstrous. But it is also part of an existing Christian ritual.
It is, and especially if you bring that transubstantiation into it.
Although we should say that in terms of Christianity, it's wine and not blood.
Well, here you go. That's exactly the distinction I was going to say, because what we have here is a battlefield, and so it might be picking up on tropes that are far more polite, let's say, but though the tropes here are very human, not divine. And so we have the humanly earthly blood spilled in the ground, and he is eating. And as a matter of fact, I have an image of this for you. So this is from the time, well, just shortly after, but we're still talking 15th century, and comes to us from Germany. So that lets us know that it's spreading.
It's spreading.
We're talking 1488 for this image. So we're, you know, kind of 20 years later. So in time-honoured After Dark tradition, give us an old go of it there, Maddie. Tell us what you can see.
Oh my God, there are so many elements to this. Okay, so it's an engraving. It's probably a woodcut. There's sort of, I would say, three areas. So in the background of this scene, we can see a nice castle and some trees and hills. We're in a landscape here. In this landscape, there are wooden stakes sticking up from the ground into the air with sharpened points, and there are numerous bodies impaled on them in various poses, in various extents of distress. In the foreground, on the left-hand side, we have possibly a servant, I suppose, chopping up bodies and looks like cooking them over a fire. And on the right, we've got a figure who I assume is Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He sat at a table, which, given the horror of the scene, he's got a tablecloth on the table, which I think is very polite. And he's feasting. He's got a cup and a plate. He's feasting on, presumably, these bodies. It's a pretty grim scene. There's cannibalism, there's impaling, there's the cooking of bodies, there's the chopping up of bodies.
See the hand underneath the table as well, actually. Clearly he's been consuming so much, he's just kind of thrown it away.
Discarded.
Oh, and there's a foot there as well. Yeah, but it feeds into, doesn't it, what we have been talking about. Okay, maybe not 23,000 bodies, but it feeds into this idea that he is at the center of chaos. But is he a vampire? From any of this,
what are your criteria?
What are you getting that says vampire to you in this in this depiction? Because he is the
person. He's a cannibal.
He's a cannibal. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's a cannibal. And I guess cannibalism and vampires are linked, but it's not explicit though, because they don't eat the flesh necessarily. Although that's not the only criteria for cannibalism, of course. But the stake through the heart thing is part of vampire lore, obviously.
Yes. We've really got that with the impaled bodies.
And this hint, but here's the other thing. Okay, this blood story was around, the dipping of the bread and blood was around very shortly after he was alive, or even potentially in his lifetime. But it's not the same thing as we saw with the Bloody Countess, remember, where she was drinking blood to remain youthful. And maybe that says something in itself. He's not doing that.
What is his motivation? Just to horrify his enemies? Again, though, I think it comes back to that Christianization, but it's a bastardization of it, I think. This transformation that you consume something of your enemies or the people that you have power over, you physically consume part of them, and it gives you power. And I think that is vampiric.
Yes, that's true. That's really true, actually. I still don't, you're right, I still don't get, to me, he's not as frightening as a vampire is. If that
I
makes sense.
Wouldn't like to meet him.
No, and we ain't going to because it's not 1460, whatever.
Yeah.
But yes, I know what you mean. He feels very human to me, nonetheless. I think that's my point. He feels like it's grounded in earthly things and humanity. And so that's the tension here.
Mm.
But if we fast forward a little bit, and let's go to the 19th century, it's quite a big fast forward. Let's go to the 19th century and perhaps a vampire figure that we're a little bit more familiar with.
I feel like Vlad's story gives us all the ingredients for a vampire story, but it doesn't necessarily cook them up in the way that we need.
Mm.
And I feel like the next story is going to give us that complete recipe.
Yes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But at that instant, another sensation swept through me as quick as lightning. I was conscious of the presence of the Count, and of his being as if lapped in a storm of fury. As my eyes opened involuntarily, I saw his strong hand grasp the slender neck of the fair woman and, with giant's power, draw it back. Her blue eyes transformed with fury, her white teeth champing with rage, and her fair cheeks blazing red with passion. But the Count. Never did I imagine such wrath and fury, even to the demons of the pit. His eyes were positively blazing. The red light in them was lurid, as if the flames of hellfire blazed behind them. His face was deathly pale, and the lines of it were hard like drawn wires. The thick eyebrows that met over the nose now seemed like a heaving bar of white-hot metal. With a fierce sweep of his arm, he hurled the woman from him and then motioned to the others as though he were beating them back. It was the same imperious gesture that I had seen used to the wolves. In a voice which, though low and almost in a whisper, seemed to cut through the air and then ring round the room, he said, "How dare you touch him, any of you? How dare you cast eyes on him when I had forbidden it? Back, I tell you all, this man belongs to me.
So no points for guessing which this is from.
I'm settled in for the whole audio.
Oh, look, I'll do the whole thing. Let's go.
So this is Bram Stoker's
It is indeed.
Dracula. Now, I lived for a long time in Yorkshire and I would often drive across the moors to Whitby, which, of course, is where Dracula's ship is shipwrecked and he comes ashore in England for the first time. So I feel like Dracula has... Bram Stoker's Dracula, anyway, has a special place in my Yorkshire missing heart. Interestingly...
Your heart is missing.
It's missing Yorkshire. No, that was very strange phrasing, wasn't it? I love... So every year in Whitby, there's a goth festival.
Yes.
Which I accidentally took my little nieces to once.
Nice.
And they were absolutely terrified and far too young to go. We did not realise it was on. It was fantastic. Would go again. But when this festival happens, I mean, literally hundreds, if not thousands of goths
descend.
And people dressed in incredible costumes come to Whitby. And when they go up to the church, which is on the top of the hill, and there's the monastery ruin there, and it's all incredible. And so many people come that actually there's loads of damage done to the graveyard, and it's
yeah.
a real problem. And I think there's been talk about, and maybe this has been implemented, of making a fake copy to scale of the graveyard so that people can
Stop
experience
it.
That, because the damage has got so bad that the bodies, because it's on top of the cliff,
yep. are moving.
Are moving, and some of them are ending up, there's landslides,
yeah.
and they're sliding into people's gardens.
Don't bury people on hills.
It's not great.
If
it's not great.
If time has taught us anything, yeah. It's not. But I didn't realise they were going to do a replica, but they do have signs up, don't they, saying... There is no grave here.
It's such
Chill
a
out,
sassy
guys.
Note on the church door. So
it's typed up as well.
It
I
says,
think.
Like, stop asking us
where
Dracula's grave is. He's not real and he's not buried here. I love it.
And there's some really nice pews in that church, by the way. Side note.
Oh,
go in,
incredible.
Have, like,
and loads
right.
of little maritime details,
yeah.
loads of
yeah,
anchors
yeah, yeah.
everywhere. I think there may even be some mermaids in there, you know.
Oh, probably.
We
I
need
don't,
an after dark
remember.
Trip to Whitby. Okay, so getting back to Bram Stoker's
yes.
Dracula. Bram Stoker, all I know about him is that he wrote Dracula and that he's Irish, and I don't really know much else beyond that. So can you fill in the gaps?
Yeah, I mean, he is Irish. He did write Dracula. Yeah, that's all of that is true.
I've done my homework.
That's all we need to know.
I can go home now.
There's a few bits else to him that I think are interesting in the context of this story. One being that he married in 1878, rather, Florence Belcombe, and she had been... not engaged to Oscar Wilde previously, but she
oh,
had
wow.
been matched with him, and that didn't
okay.
quite
Much
work out.
Much to his dismay and hers, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. And well, funnily enough, there are also insinuations around Stoker as well. Some kind of queer leanings, insinuations there too. So that is interesting, but she was apparently a great beauty and she Wilde was sorry to lose her, I think. It was not something he was delighted about.
Well, it's interesting that you say about potentially Bram Stoker's queerness, because I do think the story of Dracula in his hands, it becomes quite queer, and Dracula himself is, I think maybe for the first time, I don't know, but certainly in this story is a very sexualized character, and he is sexually attractive to all the characters in the story, male or female. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. He's this really seductive person who draws people in. And it's, I wonder how much Bram Stoker was playing with his own feelings in that, or his own sexuality in some way.
We'll talk about that in just a minute, actually, because it does potentially come into it.
Mm-hmm.
He was, this is kind of, maybe we're reading too much into it, but it's relevant in some ways, but he was bedridden, with a mystery illness when he was a child. It started at the age of 7, and then he just made a complete recovery. It just went away. But he was very, very sickly as a child. Again, are we imposing that back? You know, we know he wrote Dracula and this gothic
I mean,
thing.
I think we can, with some certainty, say that would have developed his imagination.
Sure,
like he would have been.
Yeah.
He would have needed to go into a world of his own imagining in order to escape being bedbound.
Yeah. What most people don't know about him, however, is that he was very much a theatre person, and he ran theatres. He ran the Lyceum, where the Lion King is now, and actually my husband worked at that theatre for a long time as theatre manager, and Bram Stoker was theatre manager a long time before my husband was. And he was the assistant of an actor, Sir Henry Irving. And Irving was the owner of the Lyceum.
Mm-hmm.
But Stoker ran it for him on his behalf. And he yeah. also helped him in other things. He acted as an agent for him. There was other things that he was involved in. But there are some people more recently who think rather than Vlad being that much of an inspiration, actually, mm-hmm. that it was Henry Irving
himself
who was the inspiration. Now, again, I'm not saying to nor from, it's probably a collection of all of it. But Irving apparently had, and this was commented at the time, a demonic control over him, over Stoker. And Stoker had written about Irving's reading of different monsters in theatre, in 19th century theatre, and he described those readings as that Irving had given a wonderful impression of a dead man fictitiously alive with eyes like cinders glowing red. So it brings in this idea that we see with the Count later, that he's got these animal-like eyes. He talks about wolves' eyes, I think, at some point.
Yeah, but also this incredible magnetism. That
yes.
Someone who other people are absolutely drawn to. And obviously this is the kind of relationship that Stoker and Irving had, whether it was a sexual relationship or not. There's obviously some level of obsession there.
Yes.
And attraction.
Yes.
And a power dynamic that we see with Dracula and his victims,
yeah.
and the people around him, that he is able to exert some kind of control over them. That's fascinating.
And what's really kind of sad as well is that Stoker, to keep the rights of Dracula, to keep the dramatic rights, he had a reading of it at the Lyceum, and Irving played Dracula. And afterwards he said to him, you know, what did you think? Do you think there's a dramatic mm-hmm. future for this? Which, of course, we know there have been now. But the only thing that Irving is recorded as saying back to him was that it was dreadful. Yeah, I know. It's
crushing.
Sad, isn't it? I know. So apparently this was very much that kind of dynamic between them. Mm-hmm. Irving being the famous, Stoker wasn't famous in his own
and
lifetime.
And keeping Stoker down.
And keeping him down in his place.
Which is a yeah. very vampiric thing to do.
Well, yeah. And so when I read that, I'd never heard that theory before. But mm-hmm. when I read that in preparation for this, I kind of went, oh, I'm buying that so much more than the Vlad thing. I'm of course, there's elements of the Vlad thing coming mm-hmm. in. But this idea of kind of a succubus that's taking from you and that's
and that actually it's not so much about the guts and gore and the blood.
Mm.
It's about really intimate, small scale human relationships, actually.
And the other thing to realize as well, this is obviously important when we think about it, because Stoker didn't invent the vampire. He invented Count Dracula, but he didn't invent the vampire, because there were vampires in literature from the 18th century, we think, is kind of the
Sheridan Le Fanu's
yep.
lesbian vampires.
Yes, Camilla.
Camilla.
Is that what it's called?
There's an yeah. incredible indie film adaptation
oh, really?
Of that. It has Greg Wise amongst other people. He's the only actor I can think yeah. of to name. But okay, so he doesn't create the vampire, but Dracula becomes the archetypal vampire going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And he endures into all these other retellings.
Yeah. And I think the idea of Dracula that we're left with today, that kind of the vampire as we know him, because let's move beyond Dracula, because Dracula is a person, a figure in theory, right? But the idea of that vampire is very much Stoker's idea, I think, overall. There is the blood drinking, there is the perpetual life, or at least a very extended life. Siring is a thing that we come to know.
Well, that's so fascinating. That there's this idea of vampiric reproduction that's separate from human, quote-unquote, natural yeah. reproduction.
Now, I will say Stoker doesn't invent that. That predates Stoker. But yes, the point still stands. Yeah,
yeah, and this idea of, yes, as you say, siring other vampires, transforming other people through a bodily exchange, mm. bodily interaction, but also one that is ritualistic, which feels semi-religious to me. It's about sex.
Yeah.
It's all these things mixed together. And I think, okay, so Bram Stoker isn't the father. He hasn't sired the vampire.
Yeah.
But he gives us a distilled, concentrated version of that that I think is the version that endures.
Yeah. Why is it in the 19th century then? Rather than, okay, we said it begins in the 18th century, but what happens in the 19th century that makes this so pertinent?
Well, I think we can, on the one hand, you can look at it as being part of this sort of broader Gothic tradition. So we have all kinds of monsters coming into play, and we've got this idea of a tension between the polite veneer of society and something sexier and more dangerous going on. I'm thinking about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, for mm-hmm. example, being the perfect example of that dichotomy in one character. Think about the Brontes writing, you've got Heathcliff and then his opposite Linton, who are both vie for Cathy's hands in Wuthering Heights. And they're, on the one hand, the sort of wild man who's all rugged and he's part of the landscape and he doesn't adhere to any kind of moral values or societal rules. And then you've got Linton, who's this kind of preened, performative. You find this throughout 19th century literature, and I think we can see Dracula as part of that. I think there's something as well about exoticism in the 19th century, about empire, about othering. Dracula is a foreigner. Yes, he's from Europe, He comes to British shores on a ship. There's a shipwreck. There's a lot there about 19th century anxieties about the world and travelling in the world. The fact that Dracula travels in his coffin, but he has to have Transylvanian soil. About the sort of the literal practicalities of travelling on a globe that's shrinking all the time. But there's something, I guess, a conflict between the old world that Dracula comes from, because in Bram Stoker's version, of course, he is already, I think, centuries old, and he comes from a sort of misty, deep past that is never quite explained.
We don't know,
And very much Vlad the Impaler era, but he comes into a world of modernity and he disrupts that, I guess, and he interferes with its technology, interferes with its rules, and there's something maybe there about, modernity and history, civilization and chaos.
Okay, so do you want to talk about modernity?
Yes, please. Ian, give me some modern vampires.
Let's go to some modern vampires. See if you recognise it. So let's go for it. Edward in the sunlight was shocking. I couldn't get used to it, though I'd been staring at him all afternoon. God, get a hobby. Okay. His skin, white despite the faint flush from yesterday's hunting trip. He's still flushed from... Anyway, literally sparkled like thousands of tiny diamonds were embedded in the surface. He lay perfectly still in the grass, his shirt open over his sculpted incandescent chest, his scintillating arms bare. What are scintillating arms? Okay, wait. His glistening, pale lavender lids were shut, though, of course, he didn't sleep, of course. A perfect statue carved in some unknown stone, smooth like marble, glittering like crystal. Now and then his lips would move so fast it looked like they were trembling. But when I asked, he told me he was singing to himself. It was too low for me to hear. Okay, pause. Why is he muttering?
Can I just say that you are mocking the beloved...
No, I'm not mocking anything.
...of teenage girls in the 2000s everywhere, me included.
I'm confused, but I'm not mocking. Okay, we're going to go again. Next bit. So he's singing away to himself. I enjoyed the sun too. I would have liked to lie back as he did and let the sun warm my face. But I stayed curled up, my chin resting on my knees, unwilling to take my eyes off him. Weird. The wind was gentle. It tangled my hair and ruffled the grass that swayed around his motionless form. Ooh. The meadow, so spectacular to me at first, paled next to his magnificence. The meadow paled next to his magnificence.
I take back all my comments about wanting the audiobook of Bram Stoker. I want the audiobook of this.
Paled
by,
next to his magnificence. Okay. Right.
He's very magnificent.
When I looked up again, his eyes were open, watching me. Butterscotch today. Lighter, warmer after hunting. I don't scare you, he asked playfully. Oh, let me do it again then. I don't scare you, he asked playfully.
He's very
calm. Is he a leprechaun? Yeah. Is he a gay Irish leprechaun? But I could hear the real curiosity in his soft voice. No more than usual. Oh, that's no more than usual. This girl lives her life in constant fear.
The gender politics of this book are bad.
He smiled wider. His teeth flashed in the sun. That's a lot.
Okay, so we're into the Twilight territory now.
Twilight books.
Okay, I'm going to confess something now.
Go on.
Whilst I admit that these books are not the great works of literature that one might expect.
Yeah.
I do routinely watch the films. They're my comfort films.
Oh,
do. And then sometimes I move on to the Twilight fan fiction classic that is 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, I've never... That's Twilight fan fiction?
Yeah. Yeah, which is so, we can talk about this because this is, it's so interesting in terms of vampirism in that, because of course the vampire element is,
I haven't seen that now or even read it, so I don't know anything about it apart from whips.
I know what we're doing this week. We are watching this. Like we
okay, Maddie. 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan
fiction. It is Twilight fan fiction. Yeah. It's the same story, only with
no vampires
and lots of equipment. Okay, Twilight. I suppose, in lots of ways, Edward Cullen, who we've just heard of in this scene,
he's lovely magnificence.
Well, he is the ultimate... He's a vampire in the traditional sense, that he's incredibly beautiful, he's really attractive,
yes.
People are drawn to him like a magnet, but he's also dangerous. And of course, there's that contrast, that conflict between beauty and danger,
I
suppose. And this is the ultimate expression of that. And what could be more appealing to a teenage girl than a dangerous bad boy with very nice hair?
Not just teenage girls.
Yeah, teenage everyone.
Although it wasn't.
And some adults too.
I'm sure. But why, to wrap up then, I mean, this was huge. And obviously I skipped over what I wanted to put in was Anne Rice, Interview with the Vampire. Like that was, I loved that and still love that. That's what I rewatch sometimes. But why has the vampire endured? Why is that still selling books, selling movies? You know, we talk, Vlad always comes up. I think we've been slightly misdirected with Vlad, actually. I think there are elements there that come through.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, for me, instinctively,
he's not a vampire.
It doesn't feel like it's the right thing. There are older Eastern European traditions that are coming in. There's medical things. And then, of course, the gothicism of the 19th century. So, like, why has it endured so much?
I think that one of the most appealing things about vampires is that they feel like they exist in our world and
yes.
in the Twilight universe. Of
and
course, they do. And they're hidden.
Yeah.
They're hidden in our world.
Yeah.
There are these clues that they're there. They're incredibly beautiful. I love in the Twilight books, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on Twilight, but I love
we couldn't.
I'd need a different co-host for that, I think. You know, that they're these fully grown, beautiful adult humans who are vampires, continue to go to high school and they just keep repeating it and no one asks any questions.
Yeah.
So this idea that if you look closely, you can notice them, but they are just there living normal lives, but draining everyone of literal blood, but of their sort of life force.
Yeah.
But also that they draw people in and you can become kind of trapped by them, I think.
Mm.
But that, especially thinking about the Twilight series and of Bram Stoker's Dracula, that you can put yourself in that position, that you might be so attracted to them that you allow them to drink your blood. Because that's the other thing as well about the Dracula myth, right? That he attacks people and he drinks their blood. But often people offer themselves up to him, and that it's a transactional thing, that he promises people immortality, he promises to make people into vampires. And again, back to this idea of siring people, which comes up so much in Twilight, because there's obviously the bizarre storyline, which seems to be more sort of Christianized warning about teenage pregnancy. But anyway, you know, this sort of complicated mythology around how vampires reproduce, how they multiply, what their lore is. And I mean that in terms of their folklore, but also in terms of their rules, their lore, how they go about in the world and how they keep themselves secret. I think Twilight offers a very complete world with very set rules in that regard. And it's quite a compelling version of the Dracula myth, I suppose.
Well, before Twilight was even a twinkle in Stephanie Meyer?
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie Meyer's eye, I was petrified of vampires when I was a child. It was the thing. I remember crawling into my mum and dad's bed when I was like 4 or 5 years old. I started school and one of my friends was like, you know, vampires are real, because my cousin saw one in Dublin once. And I was like, well, if your cousin saw one, we're all fecked.
What was it doing in Dublin?
I don't know. It was asleep in a coffin in a house. I remember that much. And I was petrified. And I would, I'd cross over into my parents' room and just be like, and they wouldn't even be in the bed. But I was like, if you think that I'm sleeping in that room my own when there's a vampire wandering around Dublin. I'm not even from Dublin, but it's too close.
Were you anywhere near Dublin?
No, well, a good hour and a half from it. And I was like, no, we're not having this today. So they're frightening too, right? Like that's what you're saying. They're actually petrifying things. Yeah.
But deliciously frightening. I think that's the thing, that they have so much appeal. And maybe for children they're scary, but there's something of a sexuality around vampires as well. And I think that's why for a teenage audience, it was so such a big deal when the Twilight books and films came out, and that's why it did so well. And I think for any readers now of Bram Stoker's Dracula, the element of sex and attraction in that is as powerful as some of the scariest elements of it.
I think we can leave it there, Maddie.
I think we can.
Let us know why you find vampires attractive. It's not that I don't, but like so many people do.
Who is your favourite vampire? My favourite on-screen vampire has to be Gary Oldman in the Coppola Dracula.
Mine's Brad Pitt, clearly. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Or Tom Cruise in that film.
Yeah, but more so Brad Pitt, though.
I'm more of a Tom Cruise person.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't know you had no taste. Thank you very much for listening to and watching After Dark. Leave a review. Leave us any comments as to why you fancy vampires, as I said. And we will see you again next time with more tales from the darker side of history.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of After Dark. Please follow this show wherever you get your podcast. It really helps us and you'll be doing us a big favour.
Don't forget, you can listen to all these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe.
And as a special gift, now don't say we never give you anything, you can also get your first 3 months for £1 a month when you use the code AFTERDARK at checkout.